Are you planning on the higher interest rates that are on the way? I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. That was the chair of the Fed, Janet Yellen, on Capitol Hill for 2 days this week. What were we left with? On Thursdays, we like to check in with Diane Swonk, the noted economist at DS Economics in Chicago. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
So Dr. Yellen talked about the economy, faced tough questions, particularly in on the House side of her testimony second day. What did you make of this in the end?
Well, her message is clear. The U.S. economy is, it did enter 2017 better than it did a year ago, and we're moving towards where the Fed wants to go, which means eventually the Fed will be doing rate hikes, and I think they'll make good on their forecast for multiple rate hikes this year. Remember, multiple is more than one. That's the good news. She also opened the door a crack for a rate hike in March, but didn't walk through, and I think that's important as well. Yellen was really very careful to defend the Fed's role in the U.S. economy in supporting growth and sort of reassuring that we have come here finally to a turning point.
I know there were some members of Congress quite focused on the burdens of government regulation is what's holding the economy back. That's not exactly how Dr. Yellen saw it.
No, she pushed back quite aggressively, saying, listen, the regulations that we put through were meant to stop a repeat of the crisis that we had in 2008. We can all debate whether or not they did that. But certainly the fact that regulations alone held back the economy, particularly in the banking sector, is a little bit of a stretch. I think Yellen went out of her way to say, listen, early on, we asked for help from Congress to stimulate the economy. You weren't there.
Meanwhile, market participants weren't paying that much attention to Dr. Yellen. They seemed to be focused on the promise, at least, of tax cuts in Washington.
Yeah, I was just there, and believe me, not a thing is happening. They're not moving at all on any of those prospects right now.
Don't tell anybody. But she just did on national radio. Diane Swonk, CEO of DS Economics in Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Trump tweeted today that, quote, the stock market hits new high with longest winning streak in decades, unquote. Now, that might refer to recent days with the Dow, S&P and the Nasdaq hitting a bunch of new highs, or possibly to the second largest bull run in history, which, of course, mostly played out in Obama territory. Stock markets were mixed in early trading today. South Carolina has a non-union reputation, but the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers thought they had a shot at unionizing the Boeing aircraft plant in North Charleston. The votes are now in, and 74% of workers have decided no union. The lead organizer says he's disappointed workers won't have the chance to see, quote, all the benefits that come with union representation. Hoyt Wheeler is professor emeritus at the University of South Carolina and is an expert on labor relations and employment law.
We are the least unionized state. It would have been a grand victory for the machinist union and for labor. It continues our problems with having a union. It's very difficult to organize in South Carolina, and that remains so.
Very difficult to organize because of the legal framework there?
There is a long-established view of unions in South Carolina, originally industrialized, offering cheap non-union, docile labor, and that still remains the case, I think.
So it's a cultural thing. It's seen as a competitive advantage of South Carolina that there is this anti-union strain.
That is true for people of industry and for our Republican politicians. Some of us don't see that as a strength, but we are very much in a minority. I believe that the Boeing workers in Charleston are making something like 36% less than the workers in Washington State. We are generally a low-wage state. In our political system, the lack of unions means that an alternative voice to the very conservative politicians is not heard very often.
Hoyt Wheeler is a professor emeritus at the University of South Carolina. Professor, thank you for this.
You're welcome.
New study in the New England Journal of Medicine says some emergency room doctors are much more likely to prescribe opioids than others, and the patients who see these big prescribers are more likely to become addicted. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the story.
The study analyzed more than 300,000 Medicare patients who went to the emergency room. It found that some emergency room doctors were three times more likely to prescribe opioids than others.
Who you see matters.
That's the study's senior author, Anupam Jena, a Harvard Medical School professor. He says for patients, it matters for two reasons.
One is their likelihood of walking out with an opioid prescription, and two is their likelihood of becoming a long-term user of opioids.
Ellen Mara teaches economics and health policy at Dartmouth College. She says some insurance companies are already tracking doctors' prescribing patterns.
And then contact them and say, hey, you know, Dr. Smith, we see that your prescribing is way out of line. If you can't justify that, we will stop paying for claims.
Mara says opioid prescriptions have started to fall since peaking in 2010. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
In one of the biggest new stock offerings in the tech world, there is news that Snapchat's advisors have finished their calculations and the company will value itself at as much as $22 billion, according to the Financial Times. That's lower than earlier estimates for the company with the messages that quickly vanish. With just 330 workers, the valuation means the company is worth $67 million per employee, the latest sign that in tech it doesn't take many humans to create perceived value. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.